side.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem and with me is Arvind. And we're going to continue with what we started last week. We started a new series after completing the Ramkatha Rasvahini, which is the story of the Ramayana as beautifully penned by Bhagwan. And now we're moving on to another very, very popular book of Bhagwan, the Bhagavata Vahini. This is about the Srimad Bhagavatam. And last week we started off by speaking of the importance of this text and the concept itself of reading and dwelling on the stories of the avatar and his interaction with devotees. We're going to continue with that and probably have a little beginning of the text itself. But today, apart from Arvind joining me, like last time we had Amay and brother Giridhar being a part of the team, today we have one of our own, we have CG Sai Prakash joining us for this week's satsang. So before we give you a brief summary of what we spoke last week and then start this week's program, let's ask Arvind and Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sairam to both of you.
Sairam Prem, and as we discovered last week, there can be nothing more pleasurable and poignant than discussing the Bhagavata. Last week we distinguished between the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
One is the teachings of the Lord, one is the stories of the Lord. We further went on to elaborate the beginnings of the Bhagavatam. There are many ways, there are many starting points for the Bhagavatam as it's traditionally narrated during saptahams that are held across India and across the world. And one of those stories is that about the despondency of Vedavyasa, the feeling of unfulfilled life that Vyasa feels, having classified the four Vedas, having composed the Panchama Veda, which is Mahabharata, having written the Upanishads and the Itihasas, having done all this, he's still feeling unfulfilled. And how Narada tells him the way to find fulfillment is through describing the glories of the Lord. Because as he did all these, he was so involved in karma and the jnana part, he did not allow enough vent to the bhakti part. So that was one story. The other story was of how Narada finds a beautiful young woman at Vrindavan, that is the place of the childhood leelas of Lord Krishna. She is weeping because next to her are two elderly, almost old men who are almost on their deathbed, and these two happen to be her sons. So this lady is Bhakti, and her elder, so old sons are Vairagya and Jnana. So she is lamenting that while I am being fostered by the Bhakti that is prevalent at Vrindavan, Jnana and Vairagya no one seems to be fostering, and that's why they are dying off. And there again Narada gives the Bhagavata as the solution to foster Jnana and Vairagya. So there are many different starting points for this Bhagavatam, and today I think possibly in our introduction to this series we will go into a third starting point, which is also a very popular starting point for many, which is the story of how the Bhagavata came to be narrated to Emperor Parikshit by the sage Shuka, who is, I believe, the son of Vedavyasa himself.
Right.
So we will possibly take that up this week and further continue with Bhagavatam. Of course, it will be interspersed with our own Sai Bhagavata.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. You know, when you were mentioning about Vedavyasa and how he came about to write Bhagavatam, well, if you just zoom out a little bit, I think that's what happened overall with the Puranas. Like, Bhagavatam is also known as Bhagavata Purana.
Mm. Right.
And Swami often says, you know, you had the Vedas, you had the Upanishads. The Vedas were catering to people who had an understanding of the language, the chants and the rituals that had to be performed. And people with interest and a deeper understanding would automatically go on and, you know, appreciate the Upanishads.
Yes.
But then it's like most of us, when we go to a doctor, if you're sick, if you're not well, and you go to a doctor, you're not going to start with asking him, what's the cause of my disease? And please give me the ingredients of what could possibly cure it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just going to take the pill that he's going to give you. You have faith in the doctor, and you appreciate that he's taking his time off, although you pay him. In fact, Swami often says, you should thank the doctor even after he gives you the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think Puranas are more, you know, brought in that vein, where it just reaches out to common people in a story form. And you have heroes for each Purana. And for the Bhagavata Purana, of course, Lord Krishna is the hero. Now, the beauty of this is, you don't need to think, you don't need to analyze, you don't need to rationalize out things, but just love and faith. That's what I think, it just eases your mind. The more and more you start analyzing and conceptualizing, your mind becomes stronger. And it's more difficult to break the mind off when you start analyzing. But if it's just the heart, and you're just open, your heart opens up and accepts everything with a lot of faith and love, I think that's the royal path.
I think that's a very beautiful point that you raised. Because when you look at the Bhagavatam, and one of the things which will strike us is, if you remove the faith part of it, if you remove the idea that this is the story of the Lord who has come down, you will find a lot of controversies there.
Okay.
You know, as one of the mythologists write about it, there are every kind of relationships which we think is taboo right now in our culture.
Right.
You know, actions which we don't accept of. That is, yeah, Krishna standing there and telling a man who is saying, I want peace, no, you go and fight. Right. And you have Krishna who is spending time with women, like how they portray it usually. All of this is there, and he says each one of these descriptions of the Lord, many of it, for instance, when we were going through the Ramayana, we were seeing that many times Rama decides to do something and then justifies it.
Mm.
And we see that in a conversation which he has with Mother Kaushalya, and then later with Mother Sita, where he's speaking to Mother Kaushalya, he says that the dharma of a lady is to follow the husband. And he comes to Mother Sita and says, you know, your dharma is to protect my parents and stay with them. So all the time you see that the character is actually in many places justifying the action rather than taking an action after justification.
You know, right? that is true. And also another point of view, appreciation of divinity, for example, or something which is pure, beyond the limits of your family, beyond the limits of your friends, beyond the limits of your understanding of daily life, is what is brought out. Like, for example, if you see, Krishna is the one who killed his own uncle. If you're talking of, you know, examples, everybody knows the stories from Bhagavatam. Krishna killed his own uncle. Can such a person be worshipped? Like, he did all sorts of controversial things, quote unquote controversial. But how do we come to accept them? We come to accept them because we believe, we have faith, that here is a person who's embodied a power which is subtler than our limitations of what society accepts. So, you know, we start appreciating that there is a deeper understanding to everything in life. And subconsciously that gets into us. I mean, if I say that I want to follow Lord Krishna and I start killing my uncle, I'm going to reach Krishna Janmabhoomi rather than I'm going to reach the jail. And there is also this beautiful angle of, you know, people taking this naive opinion about devotion. And they think that if I am a devotee, I don't have to face any problems in life.
Right.
People could just say that, you know, I am a devotee. I have been worshipping Swami for so many decades. And why me? Why not somebody else? I have been so devout. After all, I have been doing bhajans for 40 years. And why my son has to die? Or why my husband has to suffer? So, you know, these questions get sorted out. And they get cleared. The Lord is with you. He has been right next to you. Have the Pandavas not suffered? Did the Gopikas not suffer? There are different types of suffering. But, you know, these things are put into perspective, I think.
See, when you started saying about that, you know, why should somebody whom I love die when I am a devotee? There is one part, one story that is narrated by Narada to Vyasa.
Mm-hmm.
When Vyasa is actually despondent. I think we didn't cover this story last week. Vyasa is despondent and he tells Narada that, you know, oh, I'm not finding any peace, and Narada tells him that you have not described the glories of the Lord. There's nothing as powerful as the name of the Lord. There's nothing as beautiful as the form of the Lord. You just love the Lord, everything will get sorted. That's what Narada tells him. And Vyasa asks him, what gives you that conviction, you know? I know you have been doing that. You have been chanting the name of Narayana always. So, is there any specific experience, incident that gives you this conviction? And Narada says, yeah, it is there, but it is not an experience of this life. It's of my previous birth. And now Vyasa is shocked. He says, you are Brahma's son. So, what do you mean previous birth? This is your first birth and it's going on. He says, yes, in this kalpa, this is my first birth.
Oh.
But God is beyond kalpas. And Narada, see, that is what one thing that we narrated in the last satsang, that there's no chronology in the Bhagavatam. It just goes, because when the Lord is timeless, his stories are also timeless, and perhaps that is the reason why this timelessness has been brought about in the Bhagavatam, because here time does not matter.
Right.
Space does not matter, it's beyond space and time. So Narada narrates his story where he says that in that previous kalpa, he is the son of a lady who is serving as a maid in a hermitage.
Okay.
And I am not recalling exactly the details of the name of the hermitage, his mother's name and all this, but the general story is that a group of sages and saints visit him, and Narada, as a boy, he's a 5-year-old boy, he is so attracted to their persona, to their personality, he starts spending time in serving them, taking care of their needs, everything, serves them very well. He observes that always they are chanting the name of Narayana. And that is when he is curious as to what is this name about, and when he asks them, they tell him that you just chant this name and this will take care of everything. When he asks why this is like that, they explain to him saying that the root cause of all the problems in this world is because of man's desire. And desire is, when he does an action, he does it for the fruit of the action. So, you know, it was amazing reading the story, because it's almost like the Bhagavad Gita is also embodied right in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. So, they say that when you do it, chanting the name of the Lord, just for the sake of the Lord, out of love for the Lord, you are freed from everything. You become freed from the shackles of Maya, and you are always in a state of bliss. And Narada says that that is what he began to do. And when, you know, when he says that as the shackles of Maya begin to break, you also just want to break free. He said, I didn't want to be restricted in that hermitage. I didn't find any reason why I should be at the hermitage, because I belong to any other place as much as I belong to the hermitage. But there was my mother, and she was holding me. And he says, as this thought comes, that very evening when his mother goes for a walk, a snake bites her foot. And she dies. And Narada says that his heart was filled with gratitude to the Lord. I mean, see, when you think in a normal way, this is seeming very, very, like he's a bad son. But he says he realized what a beautiful play of the Lord is. As long as he needed, she was there. And now when he's ready to break free, the binding has been cut. And then he says he wandered through forest, streams, everywhere, and finally settled and meditated on this beautiful name, which, he says, gave him everything. He said that he even went through the pralaya, the destruction of the entire world, and nothing happened to him because he is with the name. And when this new Brahma, a new Brahma was created, he along with a few others were chosen to come as Brahma's son. So he says that when you chant the name of the Lord and have love for the Lord, even pralaya cannot touch you. You know, it is after this that Vyasa actually gets inspired. So you see, when you say that a devotee has no suffering, it is actually true that a devotee has no suffering, but to appreciate that, we have to rise to a certain level. Again, repeating what we said last satsang, when somebody asked Swami, why is it that Mirabai suffered so much when she was always thinking of Krishna, Swami asked back, did Mirabai tell you she was suffering?
Right.
So we think they are suffering, but the truth is, a devotee's life is filled with bliss and nothing else.
You know, if you, going back to that comparison which you made, when we listen to stories such as this, the comparison between the Vedas and the Upanishads and the approach of the Bhagavatam. Last week we played that beautiful clip where Swami explains Bhagavatam is Bhakti, Jnana, Vairagya. But if you look at Vedas, the word Veda itself means knowledge, right? Vid means to knowledge. So Vedanta is an approach where you intellectually break down life and you go to that point of wisdom and leading on to Vairagya. And that is for a certain very small category of people who have that ability to do that, who have literally, you know, come to that stage where they are not pulled by the likes and dislikes of the world.
Right.
That's what the sutras say, that, you know, you come to a point where you ask, okay, now what? Right? You've mastered the art of earning for yourself and taking care of yourself, and you've led happy life. Then you ask, now what? And that's when it says that Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now you come and ask for the jnana. When Swami speaks about the Bhagavatam, he says, for a moment, put aside your reasoning. You know, don't look at this story as a means to understand God. Right?
Right.
Veda is a means to understand God. Veda says that, you know, he talks about the pramanas, you say, pratyaksha pramana and all of that. And this is the way you understand creation and understand God. Like the other series which you're going through, there Swami exactly explains that. Through creation, how do you understand God?
And it is the same Prem Anush doing both the series.
And the same Swami who has written the two, you know, both. But here if you say, you know, Swami is saying that, keep aside, in fact, the introduction of Bhagavatam, Swami says that, look at all these stories as a means of loving God, not as a means of understanding God.
Right.
Because if you start doing that, how can God do like this? How can God say like this? How do you understand this as a dharmic act? Swami says, don't look at it at that, in that angle. Put aside all your reasoning and say, this is what God did. And Swami says that the more and more you think of it that way, and you, and the person who is narrating it, his eyes fills with tears. As you listen to it, your eyes fills with tears. That is the best way. You are becoming a part of that Bhagavatam. Because Swami says, it's not the text, it's not the God, but it's even the devotee, it's even the process. All of this together is the Bhagavatam.
See, when you were saying about loving God, very interesting video that I was seeing the other day. It was a talk by Srila Prabhupada, the founder of the ISKCON movement, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So, he was speaking on why Namasmarana is so important. He was saying that you have to chant the name of God, you have to chant. So, somebody, it's a Western audience, and you know, just now you were saying that it's not about understanding. But somehow it is built in that a Western audience, Western science, Western knowledge is more about understanding. It is more scientific and, you know, like rational based, while the Indian sciences from the years gone, eons ago also, if you see, they are more of the intuitive kind. So that's how it looks like it has been built. So it's a Western audience. So they ask, why should I chant this name of God? You know, why should I chant the name of Krishna? What does it give me? So this, so he answers saying you just do it and see, it will give you great love for Krishna. So he says, see, the question that comes back is, see, our objective in life is to attain the ultimate. The ultimate is to see the one in everything, to realize that this whole thing is one, the Advaitic thing. So he says, where does loving Krishna figure in all this? So the answer that Srila Prabhupada ji gives is beautiful. He says, you see this tree that is there. He points to a tree outside the window and he says, look at this tree, it is so big and it has thousands of leaves. Each of those leaves have to be sustained. Each of those fruits have to be sustained. But a wise man will not go and spray water on all those leaves. He will just water the roots and everything gets sustained. He says, you just look at this. If you want to take care of the country, there are farmers to be taken care of. There are grocers to be taken care of. There are cobblers to be taken care of. There are industry people to be taken care of. So many to be taken care of. It is difficult for everybody to take care of everybody. Instead of that, what do? You have a government and you pay taxes only to the government. You only pay that in an ideal government, of course. So you do that. That reaches everywhere. See, that is how everything in the creation is done. In the human body also, the hand needs energy, the ear needs energy, eye needs energy, but only the stomach is given the food. So he says, that is Krishna. He says, the stomach is Krishna, the root is Krishna, the government, what you say, is Krishna. If you love Krishna, your love automatically reaches every being. But if you start going and loving every leaf, serving every leaf, he tells that person who has asked, you say you love your human beings, you love human beings, but you don't love animals, you don't love cow, you send it to the slaughterhouse, don't you? He says. And surprisingly, this man does it. He says, see, that's why you're not able to. Your love becomes restrictive if you start loving 1, 2, 3, 4. Instead, just love Krishna. If you love Krishna, your love goes to everybody. I thought that's such a beautiful explanation, even for a rational mind, that just like you want to supply nourishment to all leaves, you just water the roots. So too, when you have to love the whole creation, just love the creator, it reaches the entire creation.
In fact, you know, you're talking about the name and the power of the name. You remember the second discourse in the 1991 series?
Right.
The second discourse when we started off, Swami was actually talking about the evolution of the whole worship, of evolution of spiritual beliefs in man.
Right.
Remember,
right.
And very beautifully, you know, Swami draws a timeline and actually says, what was God to man? How did man start revering God? How did he look up to God? And then he says, the first thing that comes out are attributes. So, from a state of attribute, no attributes, the first thing you assign to a power greater than yours are attributes. And the way you define an attribute is through sound, through a name. So, even before the form, that's why, you know, in many cases Swami says, name is more powerful than the form. So, the name, he says, are attributes of perfection, attributes of ultimate purity, attributes of, you know, infinite power, attributes of omnipresence. So, that's why a form of Lord Krishna may have a million names, may have different names, 1008 names, 108 names, all of them are possibly attributes, or they're just describing him. So, he says you can pick any name. And finally, you know, what you just mentioned, that episode, is so beautiful because there is a form which we have created in our imagination, which embodies all these attributes, which is so perfect that we can relate to him. And then the ultimate goal is even that form dissolves. And you go into a state of oneness with everybody, where the form is not relevant anymore. So the first level of manifestation is the name, possibly. And that's why when you're in constant remembrance of that name, you're moving towards that, you know, state of perfection, purity, power, you know, omnipresence, everything.
You gave so many adjectives with P. In fact, you know, that one statement that you made, that just by taking the name, you start moving towards perfection, reminded me of an episode, and I thought, Sai Bhagavatam is part of any Bhagavata. I was reminded of the story of, I won't reveal the name. We have narrated this incident many times. I will reveal the name later on. During one of the Gram Seva sessions, when Swami came out, he came and asked the boys, today, whose house did you go to? Now, this was a very strange question, because they have gone to so many homes, and how do they describe which house they went to? Swami said, no, in such and such a village, you had gone to one lady's home. And now those boys who had gone to that particular village, now they were alert. And then Swami said, she offered you ragi, she offered you groundnuts and buttermilk. Then they said, oh yes Swami, we had gone, you know, we had gone to her home. Swami said, that is Radhamma. Swami said, Swami knew her name, that is Radhamma. Now they did not know her name, so they just said, yes Swami, Radhamma. Then Swami said, you know what, you know who is Radhamma? Swami, a lady in the village. Swami said, no, Radhamma is the best midwife in the world. Yeah. A midwife is a person who helps during the delivery of babies. And so the boys were all amazed that Swami is giving her the epithet of being the best midwife in the world. And then Swami continued to ask, why is she the best midwife in the world? First of all, they did not know that she is a midwife. Then they didn't know that she is the best midwife. Why she is the best, they had no idea. And Swami said, before performing any delivery, she takes my name, thinks of me, and says, Swami, you are doing it through me. And then Swami added, when I do, it has to be the best, right? So, at a practical level, here we have seen so many examples where by dedicating the action, dedicating it to God, thinking of God and doing it with that love actually brings about perfection. So it is easy to extrapolate this and realize how by doing this again and again, over and over again, we will reach the perfect state that we are supposed to reach.
And, you know, going back to that discourse which you were talking about, so the importance of that is the way Swami puts it in that, the importance of name and the attribute which you give. Most of the understanding of man was, I can do this much, so the Supreme must be able to do it infinite times better than me.
Right.
That's where the thought comes from. He says, I am limited to a body, so he must be unlimited. I am scared of the elements, he must be the master of the elements.
Right.
You know, I am confined to time and space, he must be beyond time and space. So each of this is an extrapolation or the infinite version of this finite me. And that itself automatically adds attributes to that form. And when you talk about devotion as the path, you know, when you say that here is, you attribute a name, you say Krishna, you automatically attribute the quality of infinite love. And automatically you are infusing amount of beauty into that name and power into that name. We are talking about, you gave the example of Prabhupada's example which he gave. In fact, that was precisely the conversation which happens in Vedanta also, like the conversation between Uddalaka and Shvetaketu, where the father asks the son, have you learned that by learning which you know everything? And the son says, how can there be ever a knowledge like that? And the father gives a very simple example. He says, you know, if you know the clay from which all pots of different sizes and shapes are made, don't you know all the pots? So he says that learning that fundamental principle is the learning of everything. So the same thing, if you are able to love that fundamental principle, you end up loving everything, and you know, every act of yours becomes sanctified, like that beautiful story which was said. And I think in many ways that's why, that's the difference between Bhagavatam and the Vedas or the intellectual approach, where this is accessible to everybody. You know,
correct,
the fact that every individual gets attached, every individual feels love and need, feels the need for love. In fact, there is one famous experiment which we were told when we were in school and in the university, the experiment done between three dogs. You must have heard that. They put three dogs in three different cages, and they said that one dog was treated like a regular dog. It was petted and it was given food, it was taken good care of. The second dog was ill treated. You know, every now and then it would be beaten, food would be given, but you know, would be shouted at, would be beaten. And there would be a third dog, and that third dog was just given food but was not given any care. It was completely ignored. You know, somebody would just push food into it and walk away. Neither shouted at nor loved.
So there is a positive, there is a negative, there is a neutral.
Indifferently treated dog. And they found that the dog which was treated indifferently died even before the dog which was ill-treated. So they found that, you know, even an act of being scolded or shouted at can be seen as concern. But when there is indifference, which means there is absolutely no love coming forth, that's when, you know, the being actually dies out. So that need or desire to be loved and to find love is there. It is universal. Knowledge may be, you know, we know that a lot of us can go through our entire life without worrying about what is the purpose of life, right? But the desire to be loved and the need to be loved is universal. And that is why something like Bhagavatam becomes more universal in its approach.
Even as you were telling about the dogs, I was thinking that's how we were. You know, I often like this comparison that our former teacher in our institute, Kishore Madam Setivar sir, Kishore sir, he used to say, he would say that I am like a dog barking at the door of my master. I will keep barking till he throws me a bone. I don't mind. If it delays, I'll keep barking. So he wanted to emphasize the role of perseverance and patience in waiting for the master. So when you were saying dogs, I was just thinking that if we are all considering ourselves as dogs also, see, when Swami pats us on our back, appreciates us, gives something and talks nicely to us, that is what thrills us. That is what we were here for. But if that doesn't happen, I think if the other two choices are Swami ignores you, or Swami scolds you for something that you have done, we would always prefer that Swami scold me. You know, because what you said happened in the experiment of the dogs there, that is what was our condition also. We would rather choose chastising from Swami over being ignored by Swami. So, can totally appreciate what you say, that We all need love, whether it comes in a hard form or a soft form. We need water, whether it comes as cool liquid or it comes as a solid ice. But we need it. You know, so while anger and scolding, as you say, is like a way of showing concern, it can be deciphered that way. So, all of us require love, and as Swami writes in the introductory chapter of the Bhagavata Vahini, that for love there is always a need for the duality. For you to love, you need a being to love. And rather than pick up X, Y or Z, pick the Lord, because by loving the Lord, your love becomes universal and it takes you to the path of becoming one with the Lord. So, I think at this point in time, we will take a little break and play out this song for you. On the other side of this song, we will come back and resume with the Bhagavatam.
దయకు ప్రేమకు రూపుదాచిన దైవమా సాయి దైవమా దయకు ప్రేమకు రూపుదాచిన దైవమా సాయి దైవమా దిక్కులేని దీన జనుల భ్రూవ వచ్చిన దైవమా మా దైవమా సాయి దైవమా మా దైవమా సాయి దైవమా దయకు ప్రేమకు రూపు దాచిన దైవమా సాయి దైవమా కరువై గుండె వరువై దిక్కుతోచకరీ చేరా ప్రేమ కరువై గుండె వరువై దిక్కుతోచకరీ చేరా వై మరి తండ్రి వై ప్రేమ చూపిన దైవమా మా దైవమా సాయి దైవమా దయకు ప్రేమకు రూపు దాచిన దైవమా సాయి దైవమా పవన పాపనాశక సత్యలోకవాసి సాయి దైవమా పతిత పవన పాపనాశక సత్యలోకవాసి సాయి దయకు ప్రేమకు రూపు దాచిన దైవమా సాయి దైవమా దిక్కులేని దీన జనుల భ్రూవ వచ్చిన దైవమా
Welcome back, dear listeners. We just played out a very beautiful song, and really, you know, it floods you with so many memories as Swami would be sitting there and walking around. As today we just put out one video for Thursday. Every Thursday we put out video. If you see how leisurely Swami is walking around in that,
right?
You know, it just it sometimes overwhelms you. Here is the master of the universe, and you know, when he comes down as an avatar, that's something which will hit us, strike us so much when you're going through the Bhagavatam. Now, here is the Lord of the universe who has come for a very, very brief time. And if you're talking of eternity, 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, even 150, 200 years is like a blip in eternity. And he comes there and he had so much time for us. He had so much time to concentrate on each one of us. And if you look at it rationally, you will wonder, you know, where is the meaning in all this? But I think that's what love is all about. You know, love, as Swami would say, there is no reason, there is no season. But when he gives, it's 100%. Right? That's what we all have been witness to.
I think, in a sense, the central theme around which entire Bhagavatam revolves is love. You know, there is, Swami would say, there is the love of the mother, then there is love of the Gopikas, then there is love of the Pandavas, then there is love of the devotees. But love, in a sense, is the essence of the entire Bhagavatam and any Purana for that matter, because in its perfect sense, a manifestation of yearning is love. Okay, so, you know, if you look at Bhagavatam per se, Swami has spoken a lot about the Gopikas, he has spoken a lot about their love. Okay, it starts with Mother Yashoda and, you know, how Krishna was born. When you get into the Bhagavatam, you will see, come across all the stories. But the beautiful part of the love which the Gopikas had, for example, is they started out with loving Krishna as the form. And, you know, when he actually left Vrindavan and went to Mathura, by the way, you know, I had visited Vrindavan recently. And it's so interesting. The first thought that came to me is, you if you're going from Delhi or from anywhere else, you get down at Mathura, and it's about, you take a shared auto and it takes you only 10 rupees. So you can take, it takes you about 40 minutes to reach Vrindavan, which is across the Yamuna River. So from Mathura to Vrindavan, it's only about a 40 minutes drive. It's about 10 to 12 kilometers. Mm-hmm. That's it. When you go through the Bhagavatam and you start realizing, I mean, why didn't the Gopikas just decide to walk over? They were right there.
Oh, okay. So Mathura is not like miles and miles.
Not at all. It's just 10 to 12 kilometers. If Gopikas really pined for
Krishna,
they would
have taken a shared chariot.
They would have taken a shared chariot. Exactly. You know, shared the boat, cross the Yamuna. Now we have a bridge that, you know, you can just go across. They could have just gone. And, you know, that was the first thought that hit me. The first time I got down in Mathura and went to Vrindavan, I said, my God, it's so close. Why should they spend a lifetime in, you know, yearning and pining for Krishna when they could have just gone over? Of course, everybody gets their own answers. And one of the possible answers that came to me, I think it's based on something I read or I heard somewhere. But the whole ideology was that the Krishna in Mathura is different from the Krishna who was with us. We are in love with that Krishna who was with us in Vrindavan. And when Akrura goes, like, he asks Krishna, how do I know? It's a big forest. And even now there are places in Vrindavan where there is still, you know, just the shrubs and the forest. In fact, that whole drive from Mathura to Vrindavan is so beautiful because that is in a way untouched. It's still, you know, wilderness and lot of trees. And Vrindavan as such has been modified, and a lot of people, because it was identified by Krishna Chaitanya as the spot where everything happened. So that is when it got revived. But, you know, coming back to the whole thing of Vrindavan and Mathura, that whole, the distance being only that much, the Gopikas felt that that Krishna whom they had in Vrindavan is lost to them. When Akrura was asked, you go, and he asked Krishna, how do I know where Vrindavan is, where do I... Then he was told, I don't know whether by Krishna or someone else, he said, as you go into the forest, you will start seeing footprints and with Shankha Chakra on the footprints. You will start, because Lord Krishna,
the wheel.
Yeah, Lord Krishna has gone all over the place. Mm-hmm. You just follow the Shankha Chakra, you will reach Krishna's house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that place is so holy, and you think of Prashant Nilayam, where Swami has walked, how much he has walked. You know, he has walked everywhere. We just don't realize the power of and the sacred sanctity of this whole place.
See, the other day, actually, they had called me for a talk in the university, in the institute hostel. And as I entered the hostel and I sat there as the introductory song, there was a song and all that. And after that, when I got up to speak, what hit me was precisely this, you know. It reminded me of that, because when you were narrating how you just had to follow the footsteps of Krishna, because Krishna has walked every part of it. See, even that description possibly held good for that era, you know.
Mm.
Because for Akrura it held good. But today, it's very difficult, because thousands of years have passed, there is no physical proof of footprint. That is the same with Rama, you know. Nearby Puttaparthi, there is this place called Lepakshi, which is about 40 kilometers away. And apparently the name Lepakshi is derived from Ravana after he had cut
Jatayu,
and Jatayu had fallen. Rama comes and, you know, he does the, in Ramkatha we discussed that, how he does the final rites for Jatayu. At that time, apparently, in order to wake Jatayu from its near-death slumber, Rama said, Le Pakshi. You know, in Telugu, Telugu Le means get up. You know, when you hear all this with a logical mind, you know, you get little doubts, because I always thought that Rama was a Sanskrit or Hindi speaking guy. I mean, he becomes a Telugu speaking person in Andhra, and in Karnataka we have places which show the Kannada dialect. So you wonder, how is it that Rama changed languages? Anyway, but you know, it's all based on faith. I have no proof of that. They show one big footprint that is embedded in the granite rock.
Yeah.
And they say that Sita managed to put one foot down, you know, trying to escape, but Ravana again pulled her back and took her off. So there's one footprint of Sita. And Swami described Sita as a pottivadu, as a little short one. And you look at that footprint, it's about a meter in length, and you wonder if Sita, the dwarf short of those times, was this big. Then imagine Rama. So it's all so much on, you know, based on faith. But when it comes to our Swami, we have got actual pictures. You know, that's where I started off that talk, with one little episode wherein, you know, all of us used to sleep in the dining hall. Because if you want to sleep early, there are boys studying in the room, lights will be on. Dining hall is the only dark place in the entire hostel. And dining hall also serves as a prayer hall for us. So I always used to sleep next to one pillar. And the amazing thing was, one of the days, Swami in the Porte car, you know, he just drove into the hostel. It was breakfast time, and I remember when we rushed in, I rushed in, and we were at the gate, so we rushed in and told the warden, sir, Swami is coming. Warden told me, go and announce it. So I just went, I was trembling with excitement, I put on the mic and I said, Sairam brother, Swami is coming, Sairam, Swami is coming. You know, that there was no formality, there was no proper, just shouted that announcement, and lots of them were in the dining hall. So they rushed out, you know. So there was the dining hall with all the plates in order. And guess what? Swami turned into the hostel, and then there was a ramp, so he got into the hostel. And he said he would come to the prayer hall. So immediately all the boys rushed there. They had to collect all the plates and keep it in one corner so that Swami's car can drive in. You know, and Swami's car drove into the prayer hall. And yeah, we took photos. Swami looked. Swami went around. And then when he returned, later on when I was looking at the photos, it thrilled me, because, you know, I felt exactly at the place where I sleep every night. That is the place where Swami's car was. Swami was seated there. So, you know, I just felt that like the Gopikas or whatever of the bygone era, where they could inhabit the same earth and breathe in the same air as Krishna, we're doing that every night after that. Now was a real change night. As I was put in my bed and sleep, I was saying, oh my God, the Lord has stood here. And what a blessing it is for us in Prashanti, because we not only have to take it on faith, not only need to take it on faith, we have actually got photos and videos that show Swami in each and every part. In fact, that is the one project that we were discussing the other day, as Sai Prakash will remember, that in every spot where in the ashram or Puttaparthi, we should possibly laminate and put up photos of Swami being in that spot, because like Krishna, Krishna's footsteps being present all over Vrindavan, Sai's footsteps are present all over Puttaparthi.
Right. Even as Prakash, you were telling about the distance between Mathura and the conclusion which you came to is very interesting, because if you read the work of K. Munshi,
mm-hmm.
Kulapati Munshi, Swami had very, very fondly referred to him, and Swami had gone and seen
Swami
him in his last days.
Visited him as well, yeah.
I think he was there as one of the gatherings that Swami was in Bombay, and Swami
1968, I think First World Conference time.
Right, and Swami went
there
and visited him also when he was in the hospital, if I'm not wrong.
Swami also, from what I remember, what I read, he had a problem, I don't know, Parkinson's or whatever, because mm-hmm. of his hand would keep shivering, and it was there that Swami held it tight and, you know, cured him also.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, I think, yeah, during his last final few days, right, Swami had visited him.
See,
also
he, in his very, very popular book which he had written about the Krishna avatar, in the introduction he says that, you know, these are all my imaginations.
Oh, okay.
Okay? But he says that, after all, that is what makes God.
Mm.
You know, God is what you think He is. Mm. You know, God is the place that you give for Him. And he says, my Lord is Krishna and I envision Him like this.
Mm.
And most of the places, he gives an explanation of why Krishna did such a thing, mm. why this devotee did such a thing. So there, you know, a very beautiful conversation the night before Krishna leaves to Mathura, he has with Radha. And at one point, Krishna says, Radha, you come with me. I'll take you along.
Mm.
Because Krishna reveals to her that I may not come back.
Mm.
Okay, and probably everybody else will live without me, but you will not be able to survive. So he says, you come with me. And that time Radha says, no, I don't want to come, because the Krishna that I really loved, mm-hmm. his life ends tonight.
Oh.
He says, there in Mathura, you're going to be a prince. You're not going to be the cowherd Krishna whom I so fondly love. And she says that you go. And that is when Krishna says, you know, nobody has given me so much as you have given me. So I'm going to achieve so much in my life, but if somebody asks me what was the secret of my strength, I'm going to tell Radha's love.
I think there is a similar episode
mm-hmm.
In Swami's life with Ramesh and Paresh. Swami used to say, his classmates.
Okay.
One of them who actually lost balance and
right.
kind
mental
of
balance.
Went
jumped into the well. Swami.
Yeah, one jumped into the well. Another went mad.
Mad. Yes, he was admitted
okay.
to a mental
he
hospital.
He was admitted, and then later Swami went and saw him.
Right.
But
in one disco, Swami
he could
this.
Not see that same Satya in Swami. You know,
that he Satya related to Sai, yes.
He related to that Satya, mm. and Swami is saying, "See, here I am." But then, you know, that's what. That's mm.
See, you that was the as you said, you prefaced by saying that this is the understanding I got when you said about the distance between Mathura and Vrindavan. What immediately struck my heart was the fact that possibly more than actually being near to Krishna, dearness to Krishna matters. And while physical proximity brings nearness, it is yearning that brings dearness. And possibly the Gopikas were epitomes of wisdom who had already realized this. One of my oft-quoted favorite episodes is of that 2005 or 2006 Kodaikanal incident, where Swami took the help of one of the students to walk. You know, he needed support while walking. He holds his hand, and as he is walking, even before the students can murmur within themselves saying, "You lucky fellow, man, look at this guy, he's holding Swami's hand," apparently Swami turned to all the students and said, "Lucky fellow, no? Holding Swami's hand?" And everybody was just smiling and saying, "Yes, Swami." You know, what else can they say? Swami then said, "Holding Swami's hand, not important." And this came as a very surprise revelation, because we always feel that our purpose of coming close to Swami is because we want to hold His hand, we want to touch His feet. There's in fact that song, right? "We want to be with You, O Lord, my Lord. We want to touch Your feet, O Lord." Everything is so physical. So that is what we feel is the goal of coming here. And here Swami is saying that holding the hand is not important. And even before they could recover from that, Swami added the next statement and Swami said, but yearning to hold Swami's hand will give you everything. So when you yearn for Swami, whether you hold his hand or not, you will get everything. And even if you hold his hand and stay with him throughout his physical life, if you don't have yearning for him, you get nothing. That was the take-home lesson for all the boys there. And it is very much possible, this is what I felt, that the Gopikas knew that you can't stay physically with Krishna forever. Sometime or the other, this has to come. But you can become forever dear to Krishna by yearning for him. And for yearning for him, you need not actually travel the distance possibly. That's why they chose to stay in their bhoomi of yearning, the bhoomi that had given them the yearning.
In fact, I don't know whether it's appropriate, but I just wanted to, you know, describe that whole place when I had gone to Vrindavan.
It's why not? So it's very appropriate.
It's so fascinating. And, you know, again, it's faith. But there are signs, like you said, in Lepakshi you had the footprint of Mother Sita. Whether you believe it is Mother Sita or no, there is something.
Yes.
You know, it's up to you how you take it. This place called Nidhivan, where the Rasalila is supposed to have happened, is so unique, is so beautiful. You know, there are many characteristics of this place which make it very unique. The first thing is...
So it's a forest, is it?
It's an open space. Yeah, it's an open space. And a lot of buildings have come about around it. It's a fenced area, like with a compound wall. And there are a lot of buildings that have come around. But it's quite a big area with just tulsi trees. Now, these tulsi trees are about 6 to 6.5 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
Tulsi.
Oh, that's why when you said trees, I was shocked because tulsi is a shrub. Actually.
Shrub. But this is called Vana Tulsi. And, you know, I was overhearing some of those local guides who take people around and with a lot of put-on devotion they explain. But that was funny. But nevertheless, I got some information from that. And these trees are actually Vana Tulsi. And I actually plucked one of the leaf and ate it. And it was not all that great. You know, our tulsi is so nice. It tastes so good.
The basil that we use even in cooking.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God. That's why even the monkeys don't eat the leaves there. Because there are a lot of monkeys. The whole place is full of monkeys. When you actually go there, the first thing that strikes you, people say, just remove your glasses. Because the monkeys are so intelligent. Maybe after the Ramayana, they all shifted on to... So he said, you have to remove your glasses because the monkeys know this trade. They come and snatch your glass away. And till you give them something which they can eat, they will not give you back your glass. Otherwise, it's like a time lapse. Within the first 20 seconds, if you are giving them an apple or whatever, banana, then they will just throw the glass spectacles back at you. But if you don't give them, then they start biting it. And, you know, the whole place is full of monkeys. So, as you enter the Nidhivan, the first thing that strikes you is the monkeys, very frankly. But when you go inside, it's, you know, they have modified it and they have made a path that you have to actually go cover the entire Nidhivan. Then the second thing that strikes you are these trees, the tulsi trees. And every tulsi tree has got two trunks. So, you know, from the ground, you have two main trunks. They're all very thin trunks. They're not like huge with a lot of width. But the two trunks coming. And I actually spent time trying to observe each tree. Each of it had two trunks coming. And they say that is Radha Krishna. That is Rasalila.
The Gopika and Krishna.
Krishna. It is very unique. You see two of them coming and then merging into one. And... they were actually telling some of the devotees that people take the soil from here because this whole soil is so sacred. And people would take and people were actually rolling in the soil so that the dust of that soil, you know, fills them. So as you go further, there is a beautiful road, path that is made. You know, you'll have to bend because the trees are all coming on your face and the monkeys are running around. And the first thing that you come across is Lalita Kund. Okay, there is a perennial lake.
Water or lake.
Lake that has come up. And the story there is that when the Rasalila was going on, some of them were so exhausted and they asked Krishna, please can we have some water? And then Krishna took his flute and just touched and that eternal, you know, perennial spring came up, and there is still water there. So Lalita Kund, that is Lalita Kund. Then you go a little bit further, there is one place which has been made into a small temple kind of structure, and that is the place from which Swami Haridas got the Banke Bihari idol. The Banke Bihari is one of the most prominent temples in Vrindavan.
Correct.
And that main statue or idol is a Swayambhu. It just came from the earth.
So Banke Bihari is one of the names that have been given to Krishna.
Krishna, yeah. Mm. So, and that is the spot from which Swami Haridas got that statue. Mm. So that is the next thing that you encounter. Then you go further into the Nidhivan, and there is a Radha Mahal. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. You know, there, and you go inside, there is a beautiful room, you know, with
so Mahal literally means like a palace.
Like
so
a
Radha's
palace.
Palace.
Radha's palace. But mm-hmm. it is basically just one room, very beautifully decorated. There is a bed, a huge bed, double bed, and there is mirrors all around. And I was wondering what it is. And the story there is, every night Radharani and Lord Krishna come there, and they have a set of offerings. They say, we put bangles, we put this, that, for, you know, Shringar, for her to get ready, to decked. And then there is also Laddu which they put. And they say, even today, every morning when they go, a part of the Laddu is eaten away.
Mm.
It's put inside the room and then locked. And that's what happens even today. And so, of course, due to demonetization, we had a lot of 500 rupee notes being given there, and they would give you prasad, etc. But I was so amazed that, you know, there are things that are happening even today, and it's so beautifully decorated. The whole Radha Mahal is very nice. Then you go further on, and there is a clearing and an open area where Krishna Chaitanya. You know, just
for my clarification, is Krishna Chaitanya the same as the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
Exactly, okay, exactly. Okay, okay. See, this whole place of Vrindavan was not known to anybody. Because this is 5,000 years back.
Correct.
And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came, he went to this spot. See, I mean, Yamuna is Yamuna. And that side of Yamuna would have just been a forest all through.
Correct.
But he went there to every spot and revitalized it. You know, as if through reliving those episodes, reliving that moment, he said, this is the spot this happened. This is the spot that happened.
Oh, so the credit for locating Mathura Vrindavan goes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, Mathura possibly was more...
Mathura Vrindavan meaning Vrindavan of Mathura.
Yeah.
So because we have another Vrindavan, right?
Another Sai Vrindavan. So... he actually said, this is where this happened, this is where that happened. And so you go to this open area where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was supposed to have, you know, stood in a trance, actually reliving the Raslila. Then you go a little bit further, there's a very beautiful small temple, a unique temple for Radharani. The temple is for Radha, there is no Krishna in it. There is Radha in the center, and there are two Gopikas standing beside her, and she is holding the flute. She said, as Krishna was busy dancing Raslila, she goes and steals the flute away. So she is holding the flute and she is wearing Krishna's crown, and with so much of joy she is standing there right in the temple, Radharani's temple, and two of her playmates who are standing next to her, and all three of them are in bliss. So that is what comes next. Then you walk further. There's so many, you know, spots in this entire Nidhivan. You go further, and that's the kind of the last spot where you have the actual samadhi of Swami Haridas.
Mm-hmm.
You have a Jiva samadhi of Swami Haridas.
And a little intro of Swami Haridas for our listeners.
See, Swami Haridas is a saint who lived there, and he is the guru of Tansen.
Aha. Okay.
So he
must have lived around in the 16th, 17th century.
Exactly. Mm. And his life was just glorifying the Lord, and he just sang the Lord.
If I may just add one little story that we have used even in a few convocation dramas, it is said that Akbar is so happy with Tansen And he says, Tansen, I think you're the best singer on the face of this earth.
Right.
And then Tansen says, no, my lord, you should listen to my guru. You know, he says, you call, summon your guru here. And then Tansen laughs and he says, my guru is not going to come here. If we want to listen to him, we have to go to him. So the story goes that they put on disguise because this is the emperor of the land. Akbar is a very powerful emperor. And they go in disguise. And then when Akbar listens to Haridas singing, he is just lost. And he says, he asks Tansen, why? What is it, that special thing that I am feeling now? Why is it that I don't feel that when you sing, but when he is singing, I... And that is when Tansen says that, Japna, the difference is I sing for you while he sings for the emperor of the universe. So that makes all the difference. So that speaks of the bhakti of Guru Haridas, Swami Haridas.
You know, even again talking of distances, I was trying to think if Akbar and Birbal had actually, not Birbal, Tansen, had actually come all the way from Delhi to, it's 2 hours by train today.
Oh. It would have taken 4 hours by chariot.
Chariot for them hours. And then cross the river and then... it was a one day's journey possibly. But it was so beautiful.
So and it shows the... When you say that it was possibly one day's journey by chariot, it just shows how much intrigued Akbar must have been, because Tansen must have been a mind-blowingly superb singer. And Tansen is saying, and usually when you are a person of that talent, your ego also matches that level of talent. And yet Tansen is saying, no, I am nothing, you have not heard my guru.
Right.
So it must have really intrigued Akbar to have travelled all the distance just to hear Haridas sing.
But you know what was really beautiful in that Samadhi of Haridas when I was there? Lot of local people from Vrindavan. Very simple people, you know. Vrindavan, you know, geographically speaking, comes in UP
and Uttar Pradesh,
and their Vraj Bhasha and the local language that they spoke. He has composed beautiful songs in that language, local language, and all of them were singing together just like we sing bhajans. And you know, it had such a beautiful vibration because he actually brought Krishna to them through his songs, and which described Krishna, of course, and they were singing it. Now, certain beliefs that are there in Nidhivan, in Vrindavan, is at, you know, about 7:38 in the night, they close the doors. Nobody is allowed inside Nidhivan.
Oh, they close the main gate. Main gate.
Main gate is closed.
So there are no residents inside Nidhivan?
No. It's just a small forest. And there, as I told you, there are houses around Nidhivan. But the belief there is that even today, every night Rasleela happens. And all the tulsi trees actually turn into gopikas. And Lord Krishna comes there and the Rasleela does happen every day.
Mm-hmm.
And even the people who are staying around Nidhivan, they close their windows. They don't have the courage to open the window and see what's happening there. Because the belief is that either you go blind or you go mad or you leave this life. Because the ecstasy is so beyond your capacity to contain it. The ecstasy of seeing Rasleela is so so beyond your capacity that you just leave your body or you go mad.
Mm-hmm.
So people still, you know, they make sure they don't see. And the most amazing part is the doors are closed every night and not a single animal or bird remains in Nidhivan.
All those monkeys you were seeing?
All the monkeys move out. People say you stand outside that spot in the evening as the time comes when they close the door. You see all the monkeys going in a straight line out. Straight line, I mean, just say, you know, all the monkeys moving out from the Nidhivan. So everybody leaves Nidhivan, even birds, animals, and no birds fly over Nidhivan at night. I mean, people have observed these things and they say that because the Rasleela still happens every night, We cannot contain that level of ecstasy. So we should not be there. So it was such a beautiful experience going through this entire Nidhivan. And you know, this is the spot where Krishna and the Gopikas had Rasleela. Now if you look at Prashantinilam, as we were just discussing, there are so many places where so this Rasleela has happened, Swami, with students, with devotees. And I think it's left to us to revitalize. It's already there. The potency and the power is there.
Yes, our yearning. And see, I mean, as you said, see, there is nothing like a logic there. It's just devotion.
Right.
I mean, one can say, let me try. Why not open the window and see one night what happens?
Yeah.
What happens if you go in?
Right.
Why don't you keep a video camera trained on it? You know, as we said, the Bhagavatam is about faith and love. And it's not an imaginary thing, this faith and love. Because if you see Vrindavan, for 5,000 years it has sustained on faith and love. In 5,000 years' time, things that are supposed to have been considered logical have been dismantled and thrown in the dustbin.
Right.
But faith has stood the test of time, because faith is something that is as eternal as the Lord that it represents.
It's really beautiful, actually, Vrindavan. Mm. Although it's just a village, you still have a lot of cows, you still have a lot of goshalas. And, you know, going to the goshala in the morning and getting the milk, you know, we are just short of actually milking the cows, but they do that for you. And it's, I mean, you could just lead your life there. What do you need for life? You need shelter, you need food, you need clothes, and all your basic necessities are. And, you know, as the evening approaches, even in the morning, early morning, and as the evening approaches, you have bhajans from different. They say about 5,000 temples are there in Vrindavan.
My God.
In the small place of Vrindavan, there are 5,000 temples. Because every alternate house is a temple. And bhajans go on. It's, a temple is not just something, you know, a statue sitting there with nothing. There's bhajan going on. There's worship going on. So the whole place is very beautiful and very holy.
Yeah. Even as you were telling about the Rasleela and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's one legend about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is believed that he is actually an incarnation of Krishna himself.
Right.
It is not looked at as a devotee.
Mm.
Apparently, you know, the story goes that Krishna was so intrigued by the love that he got from the Gopikas that he wanted to know what it is to yearn for the Lord.
Okay.
He says, what is that joy and bliss which is there in, you know, seeking the Lord?
Mm.
So it's said that he takes the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is not able to do anything in life because he's so lost.
Mm.
And, you know, cutting it short to our Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we had a drama which was staged in
right.
Swami's presence. We had singer Ravi Kumar playing the role of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I think you were also part of that drama, right?
Yeah, when it was staged the second time,
right.
We were part of that whole group rejoicing towards the end.
Okay.
You know, there's a very interesting story there. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the first time it was being, Swami said, I want the Qawwali to be sung. Sai bin Rahana Jaye.
A Qawwali by Chaitanya
Mahaprabhu. So because for Swami, Ravi sir is doing the role of Chaitanya, and he is the one who always sings the Qawwali. Sai bin Rahana Jaye.
And that Qawwali is about yearning, which says that I can't live without
you. And Swami says, now I want this Qawwali. Now according to the script of the drama, the conclusion was, you know, he goes to Puri Jagannath, and after Puri Jagannath, they like give a summary of his life. You know, in 1992 or 1993, when this drama was actually staged. At that time, OHP technology was, you know, the latest technology at that time. So, the latest technology at that time was you could actually print on the OHP sheet.
Okay.
So we had an OHP sheet on which the different temples that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited and revitalized. So that was, I'm just remembering all the details of what happened there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is standing lost. So it's supposed to give, that's the conclusion of the drama. After he visited Puri Jagannath and that beautiful grand chariot procession, then he's standing in the center and this entire, the map of India comes up and places where he has gone and revitalized, all that comes, and that's, and then at the end of it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just falls down. That is how he gives up his body. So that is how the script was. Now Swami said, I want the Qawwali to be sung. Now, so everything happens the same way, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu falls down. Again he gets up and says, Sham bin Rahana.
Oh, the Sai got changed to Sham.
Sai, because he's still having the Chaitanya costume. And so that got changed into Sham bin Rahana Jaye. So, you know, that's how, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
The Sham bin Rahana Jaye.
So that becomes, you know, Sai Bhagavatam when you say Swami is there. But, you know, digressing a little bit, Ravi sir himself narrated this. The beauty of Swami and the beauty of living with the avatar is, you know, the way he teaches you that your daily life is not different from spiritual life. So Ravi sir was narrating this story because it's in flow with this whole thing. He said, you know, he was in that ecstasy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was saying, Krishna, Swami, Sai, all that. He was lost in that ecstasy. And in those days, the drama was not, you know, pre-recorded. I think in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu drama, for the first time, we had pre-recorded a few songs. Rest of it was all sung live.
And dialogues delivered live.
Dialogues delivered live. It was not pre-recorded. You have to actually make sure you are going near the mic which is hanging and actually mic. Speak.
Right. Which means that, unlike today when in the recording you are able to get all the emotions out in your voice.
Right.
Each and every time you practice, you have to get that emotion out.
You have to get that emotion even on the final day. Mm-hmm. In the final day, you better mean what you are saying. Otherwise
it won't be convincing.
It won't be convincing. And so, you know, with all that emotion and with all that devotion, he was in such a state of ecstasy. And then Swami walks up the stage. Okay. And Swami gives namaskar. And Swami says, get it. Swami gives an indication. And they get this kind of guja that's called in Telugu and Tamil. You know, it's like a steel container in which you can...
Lid.
With a lid. And it's like a kamandalu, for example, like people who know what a kamandalu is or a guja. Mm-hmm. Where you can store, people store jaggery, people store different things.
Earlier, it was used for butter and milk and curd and such.
Oh, things. Is it? And, you know, for carrying and all right. that. And... similar looking, Swami brought that guja, and then Swami, Chaitanya, come on, come here. And the first one, he gave it to him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was kind of surprised at this gift Swami is giving. And the moment he gave it to him, Swami said, Doddi poyin tarvata kadukottan kadidi.
After you go,
it's not for washing yourself, after you go for the call of nature. And he said, I was in that level of ecstasy, I was just brought down to reality. I was just brought down, and he said, but that's such a beautiful lesson. In the village, they would take this for, you know, washing themselves after going, they used to go to
the
forest. And Swami said very clearly, no uncertain terms. And but then, you know, the lesson that is, here is Swami, here is Krishna. And here is a drama. Yes, drama is fine. You have acted the role of Chaitanya. But in real life, every action is Bhagavatam. So he just breaks that whole myth of, you know, saying these are spiritual activities. These are worldly activities. This is where I think of the Lord. This is where I don't think of the Lord. Such a beautiful story.
And every time Sai Prakash, when you remember something and you want to narrate like this, I think you should not say that this is a digression or here is one aside. Because actually I am reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is how Bhagavatam is. I don't know how this story links to the other, except the fact that all these are stories of love for God.
Right.
No. Having said that, you know, even this song when you said about this, Sai bina raha na jaye, Shyam bina raha na jaye, I was speaking to Ravi Bhaiya, I was asking him about the alap of this song, you know. And it was, you know, it is very difficult to actually get any story out of him. It was because of an episode that made a profound impact on him, after which he narrated something, and it is really so beautiful. I heard this first when he was giving a talk in our satsang hall on this precise, this same Kavali, which is Sai Bina Rahana Jaye. At that time he said that when the Kavali was actually, you know, it was a pre-existing one, the alap part especially, they took it and modified it. And he's saying the modification happened by chance, you know. It was not an intended modification. He's saying the original words, lyrics of the song are Mohabbat ka kabhi dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai. Which means, if ever you feel love in your heart, look around, zara jhaako to paoge ki Sai paas hota hai. Look around and you will see Sai is there. The lines actually mean, where there is love, there is God. So if at all you feel love, look around, you will see God. He's telling, don't know how it happened, but ka kabhi, because in Hindi, bha and ma look similar. Ka kabhi became ki kami. And the final lyrics came, mohabbat ki kami agar dil mein ehsaas hota hai to. Which means, if you feel a lack of love in your heart, look around, Swami is close there, don't worry. So he's saying, this was apparently in quotes a mistake. Mm-hmm. You have seen it wrong and that's it, and that has got propagated and that is what has got stamped and that has become the Qawwali. He's telling, every time I have sung this Qawwali, every time I have sung it only because Swami has told me to sing it.
Right.
Saying the first time ever in my life when I had to sing without Swami having telling me to sing is when Bhagwan's divine body was in the casket and everybody sang songs that were dear to Swami, and I felt Swami telling me to sing not from outside but from within. And he's telling, in that immense sorrow, as I started the alap, I had goosebumps, my hair stood on their end, because now the meaning of that mistake which was made decades earlier came to life. I understood why that was made, because the meaning now stands so clear. It says, whenever you feel a lack of love in your heart, don't worry, look, and there is Sai beside you. See, you're now it feels fulfilling, because I don't think at a physical level Swami is ever going to tell me to sing again. But anytime I feel a lack of love, I know my Sai is there. And therefore it makes so much meaning that this was the meaning taken, not the other meaning, which means whenever you feel love, there is Swami. Whenever you feel lack of love, there is Swami. And you know, it felt so beautiful, because that makes you realize there's nothing like a mistake with God.
Right.
Every mistake is also a part of the master plan which will unfold in due course of time.
Right. In fact, we'll conclude with that. But one suggestion to all our listeners is, you know, if they get the opportunity, they should go back and read some of those letters which Swami would write to the students of the Brindavan campus before the university
the
came.
The Satya Sai Brindavan. Right?
Satya Sai Brindavan campus. You know, Swami would say, my dear Brindavan boys, and he would write.
Because Swami really considered this like his Brindavan.
And the way he would write in those letters, you know, Swami would constantly remind them of the nature of the Gopikas of the Brindavan. Swami would say, you know, I've named this place to remind you that. And Swami would constantly say, and Swami would taunt us, you know, when we were students at Brindavan campus, Swami would ask us, Parthi boys? We'd say, no, Swami, Brindavan boys. Oh, Bangalore boys. And Swami would stress that word, Bangalore.
You're not Brindavan.
And, you know, we would really cherish that when Swami says, I'm Brindavan boys. Because that had a meaning to it, you know. But Swami would taunt us. Swami would say, Brindavan boys. And even as you were saying about that Guja episode, there were so many times when, you know, you would be in your emotional high and Swami would break it down. Not because Swami was making fun of our emotion or something, but there was something which was beyond all of that, and you know, Swami was egging us to go beyond that. I reminded somebody had posted a video some time back where Swami was saying that other famous song, Humko Tumse Pyar Kitna, when he was singing, and I don't recall the word which Swami was punning with, and they're all singing with so much of emotion. There's no mics and all, they're sitting around Swami and singing. And Swami saying, ghee dosa, meeke telusu, something like that. Some line comes and Swami
in the Telugu part.
Right. And Swami pauses, Swami's walking, Swami stops, turns at him, ghee dosa, ghee dosa.
And one standard thing is, humko tumse pyar kitna. Swami would show his hand and say, kitna, itna, ya itna. He used to show
this much or this much.
Less measure or more measure. He would say, this much or that much.
Right. So many songs like that. The other one I recall is, when we sang a song once saying that Mammu Vida Nadaga Chusadeva, will you take care of us without letting go? And Swami said, no, I can't. And I think that was during a farewell time when we were really feeling that song and singing.
Even this O Saima Roma, there is one, Me Roya Tu Roi. Then he said, no, I will not cry.
You know, as a afterthought for this, I think once you're at the level of Swami, there is no need to actually keep proclaiming. I think we at our level feel the need to proclaim. You know, the beautiful thing is, if I go and tell somebody, you know, that hey, when you cry, I don't cry. When you cry, I feel the pain every time. Every little pain in your heart is like my pain in my heart. Even when I tell that person may not believe me. But you know what, even when Swami tells that even if you get pain, I don't get pain, we don't believe him. We know that when we get pain, Swami gets pain. I think that is the difference between the divine and us. That is a beautiful thing. Because even if Swami tells me that, you know what, I don't love you, I'll tell Swami, how much love you have that you're telling this to me. But when it's a human, even if somebody tells that I love you, we still have doubts on that. I think that is why there is nothing else worthwhile in life loving other than the divine. Because once you recognize the divine, then whatever the divine does feels like a shower of love for us.
Yeah, in fact, this episodes of Swami reacting to some of the songs, now those have become
memories,
eternal memories for us.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in a way, some of these memories draws more to him rather than get lost in the song. What is the song? Why? What is the purpose of the song? The purpose of the song is to draw us to him. And his involvement, either in a joking way or with a lot of love, whatever he said, whatever he did, that draws us back to him rather than to the song.
In fact, all the songs which we say have become very popular and famous are because of what Swami did with those songs.
Exactly, exactly.
Swami would often say that when the mother shows a finger and points the moon, the finger is only an indicator. It would be foolish if you look at the finger every time when you want to look at the moon. Once you know the moon, you don't need the finger. I think through these songs also, which have become popular, Swami has done that, because the song is as beautiful as the memories it evokes.
Exactly.
Nothing more, nothing less.
Totally. Just to end, I'm reminded of what one of the students had once told. He had come back. He spent a lot of years here, and then Swami asked him to go. He left. He came back. He's very successful professionally. I think he's doing really well. And I asked him, "So how's life?" And he answered in one word. He said, "Insipid."
Mm-hmm. Tasteless.
Insipid. He said, tasteless. He said, once you've lived with Swami, once you've spent your time with him, he said, the greatest success in life does not thrill you anymore.
Mm.
Right? And that's what Bhagavatam is meant to do. You know, when Swami said the Bhagavatam will going to lead you to Vairagya, that is what it is. Nothing else will interest you so much. And dear listeners, what you heard today will be the typical format. It is going to be very difficult to differentiate the Bhagavatam as given in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavatam which we all have lived through.
Been part of. Are continuing to be a part of.
Right.
So with that, dear listeners, we bring the introductory sessions on the Bhagavata Vahini to a close. We will take up the Bhagavata Vahini in the fortnight after the next fortnight. And it will continue like that as a serial. Every alternate fortnight, we will continue with the Bhagavata Vahini as penned by our dear Swami along with the Sai Bhagavatam, just as we did with the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini. As always, we are grateful to Swami for this beautiful opportunity where we are apparently working, but when in the process of that working, our love for Swami grows, our gratitude for him grows, our lives find meaning, our lives find fulfillment. Placing our gratitude at his lotus feet, we will end with this Qawwali. And on the other side of the Qawwali will be the segment Love to Love.
Mohabbat ki kami dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai zara jhaanko to paoge ki saai paas hota hai. O karishma ye usi ka hai ki duniya khoobsurat lagti hai varna aadmi ko aadmi kya raas hota hai. Sai bin rahal jaye I'm जब से देखा तुझको साई मेरे दर्श के प्यासे नैना सांझ सवेरे जब से है देखा तुझको साई मेरे दर्श के प्यासे नैना सांझ सवेरे मिट मर जाए तुझ पे हमसे न रोते तू जिंदगी सौंप दे हम चरणों में तेरे यूं money.